Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, I'm Mary Eileen Williams at Feisty Side of 50 Radio, and this show is a celebration of baby boomers who are embracing life as we grow older. And speaking of embracing life, it is a real thrill to welcome a very special guest and multifaceted actor, world traveler, author, and renowned dinner party host, Teo Penglis. You know Teo from his longtime run playing two villainous characters on Days of Our Lives, as well as other roles in multiple TV series and made-for-TV movies. And now Teo is celebrating his Greek heritage through his latest project, a podcast entitled Teo Penglis' Lost Treasures. He joins us today to share all about his life, his rich and informative podcast, as well as his much sought-after cookbook, Seducing Celebrities One Meal at a Time. And by the way, I love that title. So I can't wait to get started. And welcome, Teo.
Oh, thank you. You know, when you say we have, you know, what is it, 15 minutes, and to think of that life, that whole life, and how do you tell it, you know, especially, you know, we do collect stories in our later days where we can recall. It's more recalling than experiencing new things, but I've been fortunate to continue with my curiosity. But it's been a great life. I mean, I think it's a life well lived, and we are our choices, and so I'm kind of happy when I look back at what took place.
Well, and if I might be able to keep you a little longer than 15 minutes, I guess I did a bait and switch and lured you in, because you do have an amazing life. And we've got a lot to cover today, because not only have you remained curious, but you are one highly creative and very busy man. But before we start on what you're doing these days, I would like to go back into your personal history, delve into your personal history, Teo. You were born in Australia of Greek parents, for those few people who might not know, and obviously you've got a real feel for your heritage, but way back it was actually kind of an accident when you were a young boy that may have started you on this life journey of yours. So tell us a little bit about how that accident may have impacted your worldview and your sense of adventure at that young age.
Well, it was when I was 7 years old, and I was playing with some of the kids around the block on a paddock, and there was a man there who was shooting with pellet guns, shooting birds, and somehow he hit me and took most of the sight out of my left eye, and so I spent the next 6 years not trying to lose it. And for the first 5 months, it was pretty difficult, but what it did was it threw my balance off, as I realized as I get older, why we have two eyes, because it does balance the body. And so the left side, that's why I couldn't play tennis and volleyball, because I could never see what came on the left. Even when I go to the DMV, they can't believe that I'm able to drive with one eye. Even though the other one is a blur, it's still operating. But what it did was it made me, I think in many ways, made me realize that I had to fight for something, and I didn't realize until in my teenage years, when my parents were very strict and were telling me what I should become as opposed to what I wanted to do, and being that there were no mentors around, I started to plan to come to America. And because of that, setting that up when I was 18, when I was 20 years old, I went to a party, the Ballet Folkloric of Mexico, and this woman by the name of Amalia Hernandez thought of me as her son because I looked like him. And she gave me a free trip to Mexico. And from that, I came to America. And that's how my life changed through that. And I don't know why. You know, when my brother says to me sometimes, how do you see out of one eye? And I said, not well, but, you know, it's things you adjust to. You know, the brain adjusts to things. And so you know, how do you interpret life with one eye? Well, you do. You're just forced to do it like anything else. And so it, in many ways, it set up, the accident set up the challenges that I had in my life and the obstacles that came and overcoming them. And so and part of that beauty of all of that was taking my journeys. And the journeys really developed me as a man who understood other cultures, and not being a racist because of it, understanding how other people lived and how other people believed in things, just like there are different religions. And so it did bring about a great change.
Wow. Well, Teo, I mean, I really, taking that adversity, which must have just been, I guess realize it was 6 years. Oh my gosh, as a young person. But you did that,
yeah.
And look at what a life you have led. And I know once you got to the United States, you landed in New York and you worked at a gallery, an art gallery that was famous for its collection of Southeast Asian sculptures. So tell us a little something about someone walked through the door, and I want to hear that story.
Well, it was here I was 21, and my parents I told them I would be coming home in the next few weeks, and I was hoping some miracle would take place. And I was sitting in the gallery, and my boss came in with Claudette Colbert, who won an Oscar for It Happened One Night with Clark Gable. And when she came in, she said, "Oh, he looks so pretty. Why don't you ask him to lunch?" She was flirting. And he said, "No, he stays here." And I was very upset because I thought, oh, I can call my family and say I just met Claudette Colbert. And, of course, I wasn't able to go and have lunch with them. But after they left, about 5 minutes later, the door knocked, and because we only had people by appointment only. I opened it up, and there was Jacqueline Kennedy and two of her bodyguards. And so she apologized for not having an appointment. She came in. I asked if she'd like some tea. And I spent the next hour telling her, because I knew history. That was part of the reason I was making $75 a week as an apprentice. And I was telling her about all the beautiful pieces in the back part of the gallery. And they're all Southeast Asian sculptures a humongous amount of money they cost. You know, one in those days was $1 million, $2 million. And I sat there having a cup of tea with her, and what a great, I can't even call her a broad. She was just a great lady, beautifully dressed, wonderful manners, curious about my Greek upbringing. And then, of course, 3 months later, she married Onassis. And but she was just great. And, weeks later, my boss, when he came back, he said to me, "Did anybody important come in?" I said, "Yes, Jacqueline Kennedy." And he says, "Oh, sure, and left. And then 3 weeks later, she called wanting a piece. I showed her, and he was furious because he tried to say to her, "Well, I'm the boss. What can I do for you?" He said, no, "I'd like to speak to Teo." So he was furious that his apprentice had the experience, and he didn't.
Well, that is just, I mean, that must have been, I know what it was, Teo. You were so charming and so handsome as this young Greek guy that she said, "Okay, I'll marry Onassis, I'm sure." Well, then you ended up in California. So tell us how that happened and how your acting career began.
Well, I always search for a mentor. When you're that age, you don't know very much, even though you think you do. So I met with Moog Tellus, and he was the director who did Butterflies Are Free on Broadway in the film. He did a number of movies and Broadway productions, nominated, for, I think, 3 times for a Tony. And I met him, and he wasn't interested. He thought I was a dilettante. And so I said, "I'd like to come to your class, just to experience an acting class." Because I didn't know what I was going to do. The apprenticeship was over. The gallery had closed, and because of the partnership splitting up. And so I saw him on Broadway, and I chased him down the street, and I said to him, "I'd like to be your a student in your class, because I told you you're not an actor." And I said, "Well, at least let me try." And then the thing that got him was, "What are you afraid of?" And that got him. When I said to Moses, "Tell us what you're afraid of." And so he said, "Okay, coming to class, you can observe. I don't want to hear your mouth. Just listen." I said, "Okay." But that didn't happen. I mean, within weeks, I opened my mouth and said I didn't believe something he said. And all the class turned around and looked at me, and the chutzpah that I had. And then somebody had said, "You should have this guy as your assistant." And he goes, "No, him? No." No, and he convinced him. He said, "No, you're wrong." And so he came to me and he said, "Would you like to be my assistant?" I said, "No." And he said, what do you mean no? He says, I was Elia Kazan's assistant. Do you understand? Now you're going to be mine. And says, do you know what that means? I said, yeah, but I don't like you. He says, you don't like me? I said, no, I never liked you. So from that moment, he couldn't get over it. Somebody was barking right back at him, and he didn't intimidate me. And so, you know, part of that was I said, okay. And then I came out to California with him, and I became his assistant for 12 years, and I studied with him for 40.
Wow.
So that's how it all started, and that's how I studied really well, because I wasn't very good in the beginning. I was a bit stiff, and I had to take dance classes and fencing classes to loosen myself up, because I didn't realize what a rigid life I'd come from. And so, you know, you find out what doesn't work, what works, and the people that cross your path, like Milton did, like Stella Adler did. I studied with her for 3 years. And all that. There are people who are teachers. And so I was always interested in people who were older, because they knew more. And I was, you know, in my early years in Australia, I was a diplomat. I was an immigration official. So I learned how to be charming and use the best side of me when I was addressing people. And because of those experiences in my 20s, because I also got involved in fashion, and so I learned everything. And then one day, you know, I would be cooking my own food. And because I was poor, you know, I remember there was a time where I used to have ravioli every day for a week, and I can't have ravioli anymore. I mean, I look at it and I want to throw up. So, you know, you become allergic to things. So that's how it all started.
My gosh, well, you mentioned ravioli, which brings me now to your cookbook. I don't think there's any recipes for ravioli in it, but you've got such a love of food and a passion and a knowledge of food. And I'm wondering, do you think you're growing up with Greek parents, or your mom's love of the kitchen or whatever, did that kind of support your love of food and the culinary arts?
No.
Ah.
My mother was not. Well, we were poor, so my mother didn't have a lot of money to spend to, you know. But I noticed that they would cook their vegetables to death, you know, as opposed to now, you know, you throw all the vitamins out. My mother would drink the juice of the water, but I just, you know, it was soggy. And so I didn't understand that kind of cooking. It wasn't really until New York where I got to be friendly with people at the UN. And and I remember meeting Stephen Sondheim, because in the fashion world, I met a lot of extraordinary people, including John Gielgud. And, you know, I went to people's homes and I would go into their kitchens and observe how the chefs would prepare the foods and then present it. And it was a beautiful way, the discipline of it. You know, you arrive at 7, and if you didn't arrive at 7, you wouldn't be allowed up. And then they would have caviar and champagne, and here I was in my 20s, and then we'd go in and at 45 minutes later, and then presentation of the food. And then afterwards, we'd go into the drawing room and play Italian canasta with Dom Perignon and Italian and French imported chocolate. So do you think I had the taste? Do you think in my 20s I started to develop the taste of good things? And so out of that, I realized that the best way to seduce anybody is with food. And that's why I call it seducing celebrities, because the amount of dinner parties I've had, oh, my God. The people don't reciprocate much, you know, either because they don't know how to cook, or people just don't cook anymore. Everything is kind of, you know, spontaneous. But for me, cooking and eating well was always part of what kept me healthy, and because I was in charge of what I put into the food. It wasn't like you're going to have takeout and too much salt and other things. So I think it was very important. And of course, when people would come, I was, because of my discipline, that I would present things. I would read up on other actors who would have wonderful dinner parties, like Danny Kaye, who would specialize in Chinese food and have his friends around the kitchen, and he would be serving them. and he wouldn't be eating. You know, that's what I do sometimes. If I'm preparing for a difficult main course, I won't have a first course. And so I have people who love to tell stories, some people who are good listeners, and occasionally there's the person who always likes to interrupt, and you have to deal with that. And but it's a watering hole, the dining table, and, you know, it's where people stay because they're having great conversations and great food, and, you know, it becomes an event. And so that when they leave, they've had a lovely evening and are happy. And, you know, now I remember when people used to write thank you notes or call you. Now a one-line text suffices somehow. And you spend 2 days preparing all of it, and someone sends you one line. It's extraordinary where we've come. It's just people are just not just breaking etiquette, but just becoming too self-conscious about themselves and not anybody else. And that's always disappointing because they don't cook, and that's why, but they don't know what you go through to do it. The preparation.
Well, Mike. And two, I bet being a fly on your wall at some of those dinner parties, I mean, you, I'm sure the food was wonderful, but like you say, the conversation had to have been pretty great as well.
Well, you used to make sure those phones didn't land on the dining table as part of the accessories. I mean, you know, you have to create an atmosphere. Who wants to see a phone on the dining table? It's like people don't seem to be able to, it's become part of them, and they don't know how to separate. They can't be present. And so I always ask people to turn their phones off and just leave it in their bags so we can all enjoy each other for a few hours.
Absolutely, Dale. Good for you. Well, we have to unfortunately move on from food because I could talk about that for quite a while. It sounds like you are an amazing chef. But you have a new passion now, which is your podcast. And actually, it was based on the work of a 19th century German archaeologist named Heinrich Schliemann. So how did you become acquainted with Heinrich Schliemann and so enamored with this man and his work?
Well, you know, I came, you know, my education was details, you know, being an actor, the teachers I had, so always about details. Stella Adler would even make sure you knew what kind of sky it was, what kind of manners. You know, I would tell an actor, I remember saying, you know, why don't you find a chair that you can sit in that would represent the character you're playing? And I remembered when I went to Greece one time, and I went to the museum, the archaeological museum in Athens, and I saw a collection of ancient pieces from 1600 BC. They all thought at one point, the archaeologists thought it was from the Trojan War, which was 1250 BC. But it was an earlier Bronze Age. And so I got so enthralled with him because his dream was when he was 80 years old, his father gave him a book, and he said to his father one day, I'm going to find the gold of Troy. And the father said, there's nothing there. It's just a myth. He says, but look, there's pictures of walls. There's got to be something buried underneath all that. And it took him 50 years, basically, and he found the treasure, and which was stolen from Germany by the Russians, the Red Brigade, and it was exposed in 1994. That the Russians had stolen it during the Second World War and hidden it with thousands of other pieces in the basement of the Pushkin Museum. And so I went through 60,000 documents on Schliemann. His documents are in the Gennadius Library in Athens. I spent 2 weeks doing that.
Wow.
I went to his home. I went to the cemetery of his, and I would sit there just thinking about him and just looking at the details of his mausoleum. And then I went to Troy, and I sat at the edge of the Trojan city, which was built 9 cities over each other, and then looked out where the Trojan War had, where the Greeks had been. So I went through all these details, and then the Minister of Culture of Greece I met, and he allowed me to go into Schliemann's palace, until I spent time in Schliemann's palace when it was closed. So all of those were all details. And then I came home, and in 3 months I wrote this story. And then, so it's been in the making, but once I made up my mind to do a podcast, it would have been done earlier, except I had a manager who was not particularly good and felt insulted when I said to him that the sound effects were louder than my voice. And then it wasn't until my agency said, let's do it here. And then I did it. And I'm very pleased with it because the first three episodes deal with the Trojan treasures that was found by Schliemann in 1867. And then in 1873, in the second one is the Minoan civilization in Mycenae in Greece. And then the third was I went and met with archaeologists and geologists looking in the footsteps, following the footsteps of the Ulysses. And that was a fabulous experience. And I climbed up and down these mountains. And then one day to celebrate, we went and had lunch. And then he looked at me and he says, you see that in front of you is the Phorcus Bay where Ulysses came home after 20 years. And so, of course, knowing me, I went down there and took my clothes off and went in dipping in the ancient waters. And so I can feel like I was part of that myth, you know. So all those things were part of what made me interested. And
speaking of interested, I could talk to you forever, and unfortunately we're running a little short on time. But thank you for giving me more than 15 minutes. I appreciate that very much. And talk about interested again. This sounds like an amazing, amazing podcast series. So where can our listeners go to find Teo Pengus' Lost Treasures?
Spotify. Yes, you'll see. Lost Treasures. The fourth chapter actually is about some of the dangers I went through traveling by Hezbollah, who pulled me out of the car and thought I was a spy for Israel. They tried to kidnap me. So the fourth is, I think, my best story because it was a collection of experiences. But I'm doing a book signing on Seducing Celebrities on the 22nd of May at Barnes & Noble at the Grove in Los Angeles.
Well, great. Well, I know anybody out there would love to meet you, get to hear some other stories that you have in person, and, of course, get their copy of Seducing Celebrities One Meal at a Time. I mean, it's a wonderful book and a fabulous title. And before we have to leave, do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share, Teo?
Just if I was going to say anything to people out there that are looking or they're bored with their experiences, is that I think the greatest thing they can do is to travel, because it brings an education within you that you possibly don't know until you've experienced it. I think it's important we understand how other people live, and that we don't point fingers, being that we're having problems now with immigration and all that, because I was an immigration official, so I understand the struggles that people have when they come. I believe that people must come here legally, but there are countries that, you know, border the United States, especially South America, where people are persecuted. So I understand people wanting to get help, but take a journey. And I know that people really will find ways of educating themselves through somebody else's world. And it's, you know, it's an education. So we are our choices. So I always say there's a lot out there. Let's not be in routines, you know, because routines to me is just repetition of what you already know. So I would say to people, get out there and get off those, you know, couch traveling couches and see the world if you can. Even if it's one country, you know, Europe is beautiful, you know. But first, see your own country. I think it's very important that we understand what we have here, because America is a beautiful country. It has a tremendous amount of things to offer. That's why everybody wants to come here. But once you've done that, take the time to take a journey with a loved one or a friend and just explore a world. But understand before you go to read up on that country, so that when you go over there, you are not being ignorant of their ways of life. It's very important that you educate yourself that way. It's a wonderful way to live, and I promise you, it adds to your life. It doesn't take away, and we stop pointing when we do those things.
Well, Teo, you just gave me a whole load of goosebumps. Thank you so much. And that is from one very curious man who continues his curiosity. And, boy, you gave us your thoughts and your insights into your Greek heritage through your podcast, your love of great food with this wonderful book, and also a real example of living life to the fullest. So I appreciate your time and your wonderful stories. It's been a real pleasure getting to speak with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure here, too.
Well, and for you listeners out there, be sure to follow Teo's lead. Learn more about the treasures to be found in the rich history of Greece, again, through his great podcast, Teo Penglis' Lost Treasures, as well as the rich treasures to be found on your own kitchen table. And put that phone away. Stop, enjoy your conversation, and enjoy a whole load of great food, seducing celebrities one meal at a time. So until next time, this is Mary Eileen Williams at Feisty Side of 50 Radio. And I'll catch you later. Bye-bye.